I mean, I think we are facing two of some of our biggest challenges as a human species today, which is that climate change and the biodiversity loss. And we recognize the need for kind of an all hands on deck type of effort for that. My hope is that we can help to build awareness. And I think that's one of the things that this Congress ultimately can also do.
Welcome to the DuPage Business Beat, a podcast about today's biggest business issues told from a Chicagoland perspective. Hello, Chicagoland. Welcome to the DuPage Business Beat. I'm Greg Bedloff, President and CEO of Choose DuPage and your host for today's podcast. In the summer of 2027, delegates from botanical gardens from around the world will head to Chicagoland for the 9th Global Botanic Gardens Congress. This Congress brings together researchers and other industry leaders to share, discuss, and amplify the work of botanical gardens with a focus on restoring ecosystems. This is the first time the Congress has been held in North America in 27 years. I'm going to repeat that because it's worth repeating. It's the first time the Congress has been held in North America in 27 years, and it's a big deal. Two Chicagoland institutions have been selected to host the conference, the Morton Arboretum and the Chicago Botanic Garden. And today I'm joined by a leader from each organization, Murphy Westwood, the Vice President of Science and Conservation at the Morton Arboretum, and Kay Havens, the Chief Scientist and Negani Vice President of Science at the Chicago Botanic Garden. Kay, Murphy, welcome to this podcast.
Thank you. Thanks, Greg.
I want to talk about the conference, naturally. That's very important. And specifically, and since this is a business podcast, the role of conservation in our economy and our business ecosystem. But first, let's set the stage for our listeners. Could you both tell me a little bit about your organization and your role there? Murphy, I'll start with you.
Thanks. Sure. So the Morton Arboretum is a large living museum of trees. We're about 1,700 acres here in DuPage County in Lisle. It is over 100 years old. We celebrated our centennial just a couple of years ago, and we have robust education programs. We have science and conservation work that we do. We have over 4,000 different types of woody plants and trees on display across our collections, and we have restored natural areas like a tall grass prairie, an oak woodland, and wetlands with 16 miles of hiking trails and 9 miles of road that people can explore our beautiful site.
And from time to time, really cool gnomes and really cool other types of exhibits that my wife, myself, my kids, and now my grandkids enjoy on a regular basis.
We do sometimes have some fantastical creatures that arrive at our arboretum. And most recently, we opened a new exhibition called Vivid Creatures with several larger-than-life, very colorful, whimsical woodland creatures that are hiding in our collections. Some a little more obvious than others, but it's a wonderful activity to come and explore and discover these woodland creatures that have just arrived.
And Kay, one last question for Murphy before I get to your fine organization. That's kind of new to the Arboretum. Yeah, I've been around long enough that I remember the Arboretum before it had that. What was the impetus? What a great idea for starters. What was the impetus to get into that kind of stuff?
Well, we started, I would say about, you know, sort of 20 years ago, we opened up our children's garden, which was really a watershed moment to welcoming a much more diverse and broad audience of visitorship to the Arboretum. And after that, we also embarked then on some more art exhibitions, more family-friendly activities. So it's all in the interest of really sort of supporting and catering and welcoming a broader kind of cross-section of society and of visitors, and try to meet people where they are and really, you know, draw them into the many sort of wonders of the natural world through, you know, mechanisms like art or exhibition or photography or, you know, educational events. So we've been doing the large-scale exhibitions for a little over 10 years now.
Great. Kay, how about the Chicago Botanic Gardens?
Yeah, kind of a similar mission to what Murphy described. We are 385 acres in northern Cook County. The garden is a public-private partnership between Forest Preserves of Cook County and the Chicago Horticultural Society. About two-thirds of our campus are restored natural areas, and the other third are beautiful gardens with plants from around the world. We're really known for our science and conservation programs, our diverse educational offerings, and our urban agriculture, where we teach farmers to get involved in producing food in the city.
And in an urban environment, in a city,
yeah,
like
absolutely.
Chicago.
Yes, right downtown.
How does that that marriage of science and nature in an urban setting work?
Well, the garden itself, the main campus is in Glencoe.
Right.
And so it's not,
Chicago
truly
proper.
Urban.
Right.
But our urban ag programs are scattered around the city with the flagship location, Farm on Ogden, right down on the southwest side.
Cool. So you're both PhDs.
Yes.
How does one aspire and achieve PhD in the botanic garden, horticultural, arboretum kind of world? What's that pathway look like for folks who are considering a career at the highest levels or maybe even just entry level within one of your organizations?
I have always loved plants. I've always gardened. I went into college thinking I'd go into engineering and rapidly found out that wasn't for me. And moved to biology and have focused on plant biology throughout my academic career. We also at the Botanic Garden have training programs for people who want to get involved in horticulture, in conservation, in restoration. And we offer a graduate degree through Northwestern University.
Yeah, similar to Kay, I have always loved plants, but didn't actually start with that as being an obvious career path for me. I went to college as an English major.
Ah.
And after 2 years, was told by my guidance counselor I needed to start taking some English classes or I was not going to graduate. And all I had been taking was, environmental science and climate change and botany classes, and I was super hooked. So I shifted sort of midstream in college to environmental policy and then went on to study plant evolution and biodiversity. And so my career has focused in sort of plant evolution and then actually ultimately the conservation of biodiversity ever since then. And I did some of my research in public gardens in the United Kingdom, where I did my PhD, and realized that there was this whole world of research and sort of science that's happening, as well as this kind of horticulture, green industry job opportunity in the public garden world that I had not really thought about in undergrad. So I think there's the academic stream that you can go down, but jobs in the green industry and in public gardens can be a wonderful way to learn all of the different avenues and pathways that you can explore with if you have a green thumb.
And my myopic, probably somewhat ignorant view or opinion of what I go to the Arboretum or the Botanic Garden for is to see flowers, to see trees, to enjoy nature. But there's a ton of science, it sounds like, that's behind that. And my question is, can you share a little about what the science of your organization's is like today compared to maybe what it was like 30 years ago?
And I would be happy to share sort of a very kind of specific story that might demonstrate the evolution of our scientific focus. So we were founded 100 years ago by Joy Morton of the Morton Salt Company, whose family motto was plant trees. The Morton family established the Arbor Day tree planting celebration and tradition. And when he created the Morton Arboretum, this was out here in DuPage, was his sort of country retreat from, the smoggy city 100 years ago. And he did it to create this museum of trees, but it always had a scientific focus from the start. So it's in the trust indenture that we study trees. One of his early planting visions was forestry plots, and they were a variety of different woody plant species that were he was testing out how well they would be, how well suited they were as timber species for forestry purposes. that kind of never took off here in the Midwest, but we still have a lot of those historic forestry plots, and they have provided a wealth of sort of observational and experimental opportunities for us now, 100 years later. Our team of scientists in the Center for Tree Science look at those forestry plots to understand how the roots have grown and you know, adapted over time in sort of this monoculture environment. And we use them for all sorts of studies today on things like pest and disease resistance and climate change impacts and, you know, understanding how diversity in a forest can impact its health and longevity over time. So we have always been a science-focused organization, but the challenges that we're facing and the tools and technology that we use to address those challenges continues to evolve, but we are true to our roots that the sort of understanding of trees and biodiversity is kind of core to our success, really, as a sort of healthy, thriving community and, you know, in society today.
Really interesting, Kay.
Yeah, I think the science at Chicago Botanic Garden really started with a focus on horticulture. And so the first couple of scientists hired were a horticulture taxonomist who made sure the names on all the plants in the garden were correct, and a plant evaluator who looked at big groups of plants and made recommendations on what's best for your garden here in the Chicago area. When I joined about 30 years ago, I brought some expertise in conservation and restoration, and that has been the area that's really expanded at our garden. So over the last 30 years, we've developed very strong programs in preventing plant extinction, in native seed production and native seed science, so that we have the seed we need for restoration, and restoring natural areas.
So I told you I'd get off topic quickly, and whenever we start these conversations, it always fascinates me. Where's the science going in the next 30 years? What's the focus on as we think about the science of trees as we look forward?
I can certainly comment on where some of our focus is going to be. When it comes to sort of the science of trees, we are really focused on kind of conducting the foundational research needed to support healthy trees and forests in a rapidly changing world. So our focus is on both healthy trees in our urban environments, whether that's here in DuPage or in, you know, the city of Chicago, that sort of canopy that supports and sustains us where we live and work, as well as, it, as Kay was mentioning, that kind of fundamental conservation of tree diversity globally. So really trying to understand the threats that are affecting tree species and the rapid increase in extinction rates that we've been seeing in, you know, recent decades. So a kind of multi-pronged approach, but really, at least at the Morton Arboretum, kind of laser focus on healthy trees and forests that sustain us in our urban areas, as well as in natural kind of forest ecosystems. So that may be pest and disease research. That may be understanding the impacts of climate change. That may be preventing, identifying, addressing, and preventing threats to rare tree species in the wild so that we don't lose species from, you know, forever, like through sure. The process of extinction. So I would say a multi-pronged approach, everything also from sort of foundational research and what you might call sort of blue sky science to very applied programs that leverage our scientific knowledge to real world applications so that we are, you know, whether that's working with communities or green industry partners or other conservation NGOs or local partners in global biodiversity hotspots to support and protect trees in the wild. It's sort of integrated and kind of science-based tree conservation work.
Please. Yeah, we are working along very similar lines. We are really focused on preventing plant extinction globally. And so we're working with a lot of species that are now extinct in the wild and exist only in botanic gardens, and working on how to better manage those so we don't lose genetic diversity of those few remaining individuals. So much like zoos do with animals, we're doing with plants. We're even adapting a number of their techniques, like stud books, to track pedigrees of plants in collections and understand, you know, who to cross with who.
And how are we doing? Maybe start local. How are we doing in this urban environment? Because Chicago land, whether it's Glencoe, We're here at the College of DuPage, our generous host for our podcast in Glen Ellen, the city of Chicago, Chicagoland, northeastern Illinois. How are we doing locally? How are we doing nationally? How are we doing internationally with these extinction concerns and disease resistance and pesticide resistance? Because let's face it, populations grow and we're taking over the planet and it's the only planet we have, right?
Absolutely. And we're throwing a lot of challenges at plants and natural areas, from development to novel pests that come in with, you know, global trade to climate change. And we're throwing more threats at them than they can handle. And so it's really critical that organizations like ours work hard to preserve those special plants and special places that are still left.
I think one important maybe element to sort of raise, one important feature of the work that we're doing these days is, I think, and, you know, I'd welcome Kay's thoughts. We are, as a community of public gardens, I think we are collaborating and partnering and sharing information and expertise probably better now than ever before. Like Kay's team and my team on many different levels and in all different sort of dimensions collaborate with each other all the time. We are a lot better now at information sharing, at data gathering, at creating more diverse and inclusive partnerships in order to tackle these huge sort of global scale problems. They require global scale solutions. And that means partnering with each other. That means partnering with local community groups and stakeholders, whether that's right here in the Chicago region or around the world in a global biodiversity hotspot like Mexico or Hawaii or Vietnam. Mm-hmm. So having really inclusive and sort of stakeholder-led conservation projects are really the most sustainable long-term way to do it. And then thinking about and really sort of ramping up our engagement with other sectors like government agencies, corporations, private sector to really activate on some of the kind of big projects that we need to undertake in order to address the both climate change and biodiversity loss.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I think we're also recognizing that science alone won't save a species, that we really have to influence policy as well. And so a lot of the work I do is up on Capitol Hill or down in Springfield or working with local municipalities and helping them understand how they choose to manage their land affects how they can conserve biodiversity.
And Murphy, you mentioned kind of the grassroots approach of working with other organizations. I'm just going to assume like our friends at the Conservation Foundation and others are kind of integral to your efforts.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we are facing two of some of our biggest challenges as a human species today, which is that climate change and the biodiversity loss. And we recognize the need for kind of an all hands on deck type of effort for that. So partner conservation organizations, I mean, here in the Chicago region, we have wonderful networks like the Chicago Wilderness Alliance and, you know, lots of different partners across the region kind of trying to work together to really shift the needle and take a sort of bigger, more holistic look at our needs, you know, as in sort of that Northern Illinois, you know, what is our kind of broader community impact? And like I said, there are many sectors that need to have a seat at the table. I think in many ways, the botanic garden community has that sort of fundamental kind of botanical expertise, that biodiversity, plant diversity expertise that we could bring to the table in more ways than we're even already doing. So when it comes to large-scale tree planting efforts or urban planning or reforestation, you know, after wildfires, these are the sorts of big topics that are on the table today that we would, like, I know Kay and I would love to see more, you know, botanic garden participation and sort of inclusion in those conversations. And, you know, my hope is that we can help to build awareness. And I think that's one of the things that this Congress ultimately can also do.
What about schools and government agencies and those kind of folks?
Absolutely. So, you know, not only other NGOs, but we're working with universities across the country and around the world. We're working with both state and federal government agencies. So, for example, right now we're doing a lot of planning with Department of Interior to plan their National Interagency Seed and Restoration Center. Right now, we have a project called Rethinking Lawns. And when you think about how much turf grass is present in the United States, it is our largest crop. There's more turf grass than corn or soybeans or any other thing we grow. And not all of that turf needs to be turf. It's just turf by default. Mm-hmm. And so
Everybody likes. And I grew up on the south side of the city of Chicago. Yeah. If you didn't have a nicely capped, edged 2.5-inch green lawn that you fertilized like crazy that you would never even think about doing now, you had an ugly house on the block.
Right. But and there are places for turf, the soccer field, the place in the backyard where your dog does their business. Mm-hmm. That's all fine. But it doesn't all have to be turf. And so what can we do that will make those landscapes work harder to support pollinators, to help prevent flooding, to sequester carbon? And so we can plant native species and trees in those areas and have them work much harder for us.
Another thing that I'm seeing, forgive me, most of our listeners know this about me as well. I like to enjoy a weekend day or two on the golf course, and I'm loving what I'm seeing on golf courses right now, where it used to be the mass expanse of perfectly manicured green fairways and just green rough. The grass was just a little longer. And now you are seeing a lot of these native areas. Mm-hmm. Seems like it just makes sense for the golf course, probably easier to maintain and more drought resistant. And it adds a lot of variety to the average 18-hole round. Are you guys seeing that? And I point to golf courses, but there's got to be hundreds of other opportunities just like it.
Exactly. I think that's also an area where botanic gardens of all sizes can play a role, because so much of that, like you perfectly pointed out, Greg, it's like a societal cultural norm that we have that like perfectly manicured lawn. We just need to shift the narrative on that, where, you know, and I am, you know, that person on my block with the no mow May, where, you know, my lawn is, you know, 18 inches tall right now, and my neighbors are putting up with me. But
they know who you are.
But they know who you are. Right, exactly. Right. I hope they think it's endearing. But, you know, I think this is what, you know, I think if we can demonstrate this, if we can show how different models, you know, whether that's in our gardens, whether that's through educational classes, whether that's just sort of building awareness, like the, you know, Rethinking Lawns program that Kay was describing, you know, we have, there are more people that visit public gardens every year than go to all professional sporting events combined.
There's a statistic I did not know.
We have an amazing opportunity to reach a really broad cross-section of society. And so, you know, I think where we can demonstrate some of the ways of rethinking, even if it's just a little patch of your lawn, whether it's, you know, planting a native tree species, whether it's working in your community to advocate for healthier forestry practices, or if they're, you know, pulling out a playground and putting something new in, say, hey, put a pollinator garden in the corner, and we can interpret that and put a sign up and say,
get the kids engaged. Get the next generation on board.
The question about, you know, working with schools, you like, when my kids come home and they're like, Mom, this is what we have to do. This is, you know, we've got to plant this. I planted a seed at school, and, you know, we're doing all these different activities. Kids are great motivators for sort of sharing some of these lessons with their parents, with their family, with their peers. So I think there are a lot of different opportunities for this.
It's always amazing to me how drive through the countryside, see a field of dandelions, and everybody comments on how beautiful it is. Have one dandelion in your front yard and you're out there spraying Roundup all over it. And I always wonder, what's the logic in that? There's a purpose that is there for, and there's maybe a meaning to it.
Yeah. Well, we have grown up with this norm of the perfect lawn, and we are the institutions that can help change that norm.
That's great. And I do want you to know, we were talking before we started the podcast, and I'll share with our listeners that from an economic development perspective, working hand in hand with nature is absolutely critical, especially out here in DuPage County. We talk to CEOs all the time, and we ask them, tell us what you like about DuPage. And talk to anybody who's in a building and they're the third floor or higher, and what they love is the canopy of trees that they look over. And because you still have an office building, you still have the infrastructure, you still have what you need to conduct your business, but you're doing it in a forest. You're doing it in an environment that your employees can connect with and take all the advantages of. So let's transition for a minute to the business end of the Arboretum and the Botanic Gardens and talk about the Congress. 27 years. I learned ahead of this that the last time it was here, it was in North Carolina. Congratulations to North Carolina. How'd we get it? Let's talk about it. When's it coming? Give me the details on it. I'll let either one of you start.
All right. I can start and Murphy can finish, but it's coming in the summer of 2027, probably early August, but we don't have the dates nailed down completely at this point. And I think one of the reasons it's coming to Chicago is both of our institutions are patron gardens of Botanic Garden Conservation International. And so the opportunity to go to a city and have two great gardens to go look at, I think was very attractive to the selection committee.
And what is it? What is the Congress? What is it all about?
It's all about botanic gardens trying to improve conservation, restoration, education, to save plant biodiversity. So all the things we've been talking about so far are the kinds of things we'll be talking about at the Congress.
And where else has it been? So this is it every year, every other year, catch as catch can? How often is it held?
It's every 3 to 4 years.
Okay.
Sometimes if it's in a southern hemisphere country, it'll be sort of in an off, 6 months off because
sure.
You want to capture their, you know, summer.
Kind of an Olympics rotation.
Exactly.
We just had one in South America. We have to have
right.
one in Europe kind of thing.
So actually, Kay and I were most recently in Singapore for the Congress that was held just last fall. It was in Melbourne, Australia before that, and in Geneva, Switzerland before that. So I think actually, Kay, what did you say that you've been to?
I've been to every
one.
Yeah, I think I have. So this is going to be the ninth, the one we're planning. And I've been to all eight, including New Zealand, Dublin, Ireland, Wuhan, China.
We're in pretty good company.
Yeah.
Been all around the world, and we're so excited to have it coming back to the States.
And for me, from my perspective, so this is the Olympics of your world.
The Olympics,
right?
Botanic Garden Conservation.
It's the Super Bowl of Botanic Garden Conservation.
We're really excited about it.
Oh, how many people are going to be here? How long is it going to last? Countries from throughout the world are being represented?
It'll be about a week long of events. There's going to be one of the things that I think is quite exciting about it is, like Kay said, I think one of the reasons that Chicago was chosen is because we have the opportunity to really showcase both our botanic gardens as well as some of the smaller botanical institutions and conservatories in the region. We're looking to partner with other environment and conservation partners over the course of the next couple of years to put on some tours, so some satellite events. We want to be able to bring the world's public garden leaders to DuPage County, to, you know, other destinations in Lake County and Cook County all over the area to really highlight everything from, you know, let's say an urban forestry program or an urban garden or urban agriculture, you know, right downtown all the way out to Madewin Prairie or, you know, up to, you know, locations, natural areas, restoration projects, all the sorts of things that we can really highlight that are kind of the green gems of the Chicago region. So there's lots of opportunity there for really engaging, you know, it won't just be our two gardens. It'll
sure.
be, you know, other organizations and partners across the regions. And we really want to also use it as an opportunity to both highlight Chicago and the Chicago region to the, you know, world's botanic garden community and leaders. But we also want to take the opportunity to everything that we've just been talking about, right? Like build awareness about the role of botanic gardens and even just the importance of biodiversity conservation broadly to an audience outside of just our professional network. So, you know, we're going to have all of the normal conference sessions where we're sharing best practices and surfacing challenges and innovative solutions, but we don't want to just be in our own bubble of public garden folks.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
We want to have civic engagement opportunities. We want to have corporate engagement opportunities. We want to have dialogue with a variety of different sectors to sort of
elevate the role of biodiversity, the value of biodiversity, and how we can have some of these cross-sector partnerships and innovative solutions to tackle these big challenges.
Yeah, kind of pulling back the curtain a little bit. Mm-hmm. It sounds like this is an opportunity for folks to maybe gain an insight a little more into the science of your guys' world.
Yeah, I think a nice example, I know a lot of large corporations have these nature-based goals, things they're trying to achieve. And so they might be doing that through tree planting programs or investing in carbon offsets. And one of the things our network of Botanic Gardens and Botanic Garden Conservation International is working on are these global biodiversity standards. So if you're going to get involved in a tree planting scheme, we can tell you how to do it the right way and how to achieve the maximum benefit from that.
That was going to be my next question. I'll say it the way I would typically think it. How legit is what the business community has done in the last 20 years? How meaningful is it? It's all very well-meaning. I'm not taking
Absolutely.
Anything away from any efforts that were done, but it seems like if people got engaged with your organizations on the front end, more bang for their buck.
Absolutely.
More bang for the environment.
Right, for the biodiversity buck as well. So, you know, a lot of tree planting activities have focused on using non-native species, fast-growing non-native species like eucalyptus in the tropics. And that can become invasive and cause problems down the road. So we have the knowledge of what plants belong in an area. We have the knowledge of how to grow them. And we can help you achieve both your carbon and your biodiversity goals.
At the bottom line, we absolutely need companies, private industry, corporations at the table and investing in and participating in biodiversity conservation, habitat conservation.
What kind of companies? Small, big? Are we talking Fortune 500, or do you want the local nail salon to get educated? What's the...
All kinds. I think there's opportunity for absolutely every, employer, right, mm-hmm. in this space. So one of the programs that we have at the Morton Arboretum is our Chicago Region Trees Initiative. It's our urban and community forestry program. And we work with 500 at least different local partner organizations, whether that's municipalities, environmental organizations, community groups, block clubs, corporations, to through sort of a variety of different means to improve the health and diversity and equitable distribution of the urban canopy in the 7-county Chicago region. And that may be everything from, you know, a little small, you know, company, let's say the local nail salon may want to come and join a volunteer tree planting day. We've got all these different events in the tree planting season in spring and fall. You can come out, you can bring your group and come join us for a community tree planting event, all the way up to, you know, large companies that are putting very significant financial resources behind tree planting events. And that may be with us, that may be at a larger scale, where you are, you know, really kind of investing in the environment and in the sort of health of the communities that are your constituents, right? I think where you have a company that can invest in and support and recognize the value of biodiversity, urban green spaces, well, it could be urban agriculture. There could be a lot of different ways, whatever the cause is or the kind of project that resonates with your particular mission, there, I am sure there is a program. If it's not the Morton Arboretum or Chicago Botanic Garden, I'm sure it's another environmental organization that can help you manifest that.
As an example of that, in my memory, I think about downtown Chicago 30 years ago. And I believe it was Mayor Daley, the son, mm-hmm. who decided we're going to start planting trees and flowers on Michigan Avenue and all through the boulevards and all of the 77 neighborhoods. And administrations have continued that. And when you think about downtown Chicago as the true concrete kind of jungle urban environment, buildings everywhere, 30 years ago versus what it looks like when you hit Lakeshore Drive or Michigan Avenue or mm-hmm. some parts of the South Side, West Side, North Side today, it's night and day. But that leads to my next question is, in areas like that, what more can be done? Have we kind of you know, you still have to have commerce. You still have to, Willis Tower's not going anywhere. How do rooftop gardens, is there micro gardening? I had the opportunity to tour a indoor growing facility, which was just the coolest thing in the world to see, oh my gosh, I could be a little more self-sustaining through things like micro gardening. Where's that at in your guys' world?
You know, absolutely every little bit helps. And green roofs are big in Chicago. We have one on our building, the Science Center at the Botanic Garden. And we have planted several hundred species of native plants up there. So it's not just a sheet of sedum, what mm-hmm. you see on many green roofs, but it's a diverse ecosystem. And we have students who have cataloged every insect that's come. We have birds laying their eggs and building nests up there. It really does contribute to biodiversity conservation. And I have a colleague at the garden who has a balcony, and he's been experimenting for 20 plus years. What native plants can I do in a pot?
Sure.
And who will come visit them? And he recently wrote a blog. It went up on our blog this week. So if you're interested in native plants and containers, you can look that up on the garden's website. But, you know, he's, like all of us, a little bit of a nerd. And so he wanted to track exactly what would survive and what wouldn't.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
Well, and I think, you know, to go back to your comment about, you know, are we done? Like, what could we do, you know, in the city of Chicago? The Morton Arboretum does every 10 years a 7-county census of the urban canopy across the seven county Chicago region. And one of the things that we have found, so we last did it in 2020, one of the things that we found is that almost half of the woody plants of the trees that are growing in the Chicago region are invasive species. So buckthorn, for example, is a really big problem.
Yep.
So yes, there's lots of trees. There's, you know, huge improvements that the city of Chicago and that even municipalities across the region have been making, really understanding the value of the urban canopy. I mean, the value of the trees in the Chicago region on an annual basis in terms of like the savings that we have for things like heating and cooling costs for stormwater capture is over $400 million to, you know, the residents of the mm-hmm. Chicago region, mm-hmm. just our sort of street trees, mm-hmm. our kind of urban canopy, huge value in that green infrastructure, but it certainly could be better. Like we could be planting a more diverse palette of species. We could be removing some of that, you know, that buckthorn, some of those invasive species. And, you know, I think there are many municipalities that are well aware of this. It's just sort of a limitation of resources.
Sure.
But I think so much also of the urban canopy is on our private properties. So what Kay was saying about the value and power of like your garden, both of our gardens have ample resources on our websites for what should I be planting? What does an invasive species look like? Suppose I have a buckthorn growing on my hedge, and I can tell you I have neighbors that are meticulously cultivating a buckthorn hedge that I'm like, oh, let's not do that. Like,
right.
Let's take that out. You know, we have all these resources and information and solutions for, you know, what could we be doing just, you know, better?
Sure.
And so there's lots that we can do. There's, you know, and even in sort of the city of Chicago, we've been partnering with them and their sort of their forestry bureau for a while to help fast track some of the 311 requests for tree planting. And the city of Chicago has really done a fantastic job through a program called Our Roots Chicago, which is a interdepartmental collaboration to really do a lot more investing in the forestry, especially in the areas that are not the Michigan Avenue.
Got it.
Some of the kind of historically disinvested areas.
Sure.
And they're at the point now where they're ripping out, they're you know, jackhammering out concrete blocks in order to create planting space
Great.
That wasn't there before.
Great.
These are the sorts of like leveling up type of activities that we could do for our urban forest.
We have a lot of businesses who listen to our podcast. If you could point to one or two things that you would encourage businesses to do other than this is what I always tell my guests, you can't give me the cop-out answer here, other than, well, get involved. That's easy. And what are a couple of things that we could point our listeners to if you're a business in DuPage or one of the seven counties that's listening today that they could potentially adopt?
I mean, I think especially as we kind of find ourselves in a moment when a lot of funding has been going away from environment and sort of conservation needs right now. Mm-hmm. It is a very important time for private industry to step up and sort of fill that gap. And I think that it is incredibly compelling to employees for them to see a commitment on the part of their employer that they are committed to the environment, committed to sustainability, to, you know, we have been moving as a society in the right direction, I think, for a while, kind of recognizing the importance of biodiversity, you know, the value of the environment. I think, you know, now is the time for companies to double down on that and support this really, really urgent time that we find ourselves. It's sort of a critical tipping point.
Great.
I would definitely echo that. I'm sure you do. I know we do host volunteer work days for corporations. So if you want to come and, in our case, clean seeds or pull garlic mustard or, you know, sow seeds of something that we want to get into the ground.
Okay.
We welcome that kind of involvement. And at the conference itself, we'll welcome exhibitors and sponsors, especially if you're in kind of the green industry adjacent fields.
Is there going to be like an exhibit hall of sorts? And where is that, in the city?
Yep.
Do you have that location yet? Can you announce where that's? Is that McCormick Place? Or
we will hopefully be able to announce it within the matter of weeks.
Ooh, so stay tuned, listeners.
Stay tuned. Yes,
stay tuned. More reason to listen to our next podcast.
That's
maybe
right.
I'll announce it.
We'll have it. We'll certainly have all the information on our websites. Eventually, we'll have a standalone website for all of this. We'll have exhibitors. Like we said, we'll have the opportunity, hopefully, for additional sort of corporate engagement opportunities to really showcase what our local companies and organizations are doing on the environmental, social, governance side of things. And we'd love to have like a corporate highlight type of opportunity where, you know, some of these corporations that really are putting some of their, you know, resources on the line for these important causes can celebrate some of their successes.
I'm going to amplify on that and give a plug to my dear friend Chris Burke from Christopher Burke Engineering, who at Choose DuPage event, when we were talking about sustainability and the environment, I'm sure I'll get the numbers wrong. Forgive me, Chris, if you're listening. But back then, he paid his employees 75 cents a mile if they rode their bike to work. And then because it was so incredibly successful, they had to put showers in at the office because so many people took them up on it. And it was a real environmental incentive, if you will. And obviously, it got cars off the street and it reduces traffic and everything else. And I think there's ways to potentially achieve some of those same objectives through horticulture, through tree planting and all of that kind of stuff that I hope the business community just kind of wraps their arms around and embraces.
Exactly. Yeah. Another shout out to Chris Burke, who's one of our longtime trustees.
I happen to know that. So, and Bob Schillerstrom, who was the Tollway board chair, and I think he's your current board chair.
Correct.
It was his idea to do the 60,000 trees along the Illinois Tollway. I don't know if all 60,000 of them are planted at this point, but you need leaders to step up and say, this is the right thing to do, and we're going to get behind it. And it sounds like with you two guys, or ladies, we have the right leaders in place at the Arboretum and the Botanic Gardens. One last takeaway. Two last takeaways. How can people learn more about your organizations? I'm assuming websites. And how can they learn more about the conference when it comes here?
Yeah, I would definitely say to watch both of our websites. Also, the Botanic Garden Conservation International website will have information. And we hope that you come participate and learn more about biodiversity.
You know, both of our organizations have robust corporate partnership programs, which you can find on our websites at Morton Arboretum or mortonarb.org. That's where you can find information about plant healthcare tips, about that Chicago region tree census that I described. So if you're a decision maker in your municipality or if you're just a local resident, you want to influence at the municipal level, you can find out what your like hyper-local canopy looks like with some of the resources that we have through our Chicago Region Trees Initiative. And yeah, hopefully we'll be making some press releases and announcements in the coming months about sort of new developments around the Congress and how we can have some more of this civic and corporate engagement in the future.
Okay, your website?
chicagobotanic.org.
Fantastic. Last question. We talked about business. What about the individual who's listening to today's podcast? Or what would you ask them to do?
Well, recognize that you can make a difference no matter how big your property. You can make a difference, and you can learn how to do that at either one of our organizations. You can also volunteer. So we do plants of concern, a rare plant monitoring program. We have over 1,000 volunteers working at the Botanic Garden. I'm sure you have a similar number.
Wow.
So we would love to work with you.
And be an advocate for trees and plant biodiversity in your community, whether that's, you know, patting your neighbor on the back for no mow May.
Helping that neighbor cut down that buckthorn.
Help that neighbor cut down their buckthorn. You know, help people see and recognize and value the plant diversity around them, because it supports the pollinators that generate most of our food. It cleans the air. It, you know, these ecosystems, these trees, these plants, these pollinator gardens, they'll capture stormwater. They'll cool your house. They'll increase your property value. There's many benefits, direct and indirect, that the natural world provides us.
And I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't say, and as well, let's make sure we support our local forest preserves, the DuPage County Forest Preserve, the great trails and open spaces. We work in harmony with our forest preserves. Not everybody, but many people think that economic development and preservation don't go hand in hand. And I respectfully submit that my job is easier to attract businesses when those business leaders can see an environment that they feel good about. So that's it for today's show. Kay and Murphy, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And as always, thank you to the College of DuPage for supporting today's episode. To keep up with what's happening in DuPage County and the Chicagoland region, follow Choose DuPage on social media or visit choosedupage.com. We can't wait to hear more about the conference and all of the additional information. I'm Greg Bedlove. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time on the DuPage Business Beat.